Well, how are you going to do this? More or less ask me questions on it, or?
Yeah, I'd like, well, first of all, I'd like to know a little bit about you. I'd like to know your full name and where you were born and when you were born.
Is it on now?
Yeah.
Well, I was born in Winnipeg in 1920, August the 9th. My name is Oliver Holden, Oliver Andrew Holden. I was born in the Misericordia Hospital.
Maybe you can tell me a little about where you grew up and what school
you went to. I grew up in Winnipeg. I went to school in Winnipeg. I was grade 10 when I joined the Army. I was in the peacetime Army of Fort Garry Horse. And then when the war broke out in 1939, I joined the Winnipeg Grenadiers.
Did you go in with any friends at the time?
Yes, I had three special friends in the Winnipeg Grenadiers. Their names?
No, that makes sense. Yeah. I was just wondering if you went in with them at the time. I was just wondering why you maybe went into the Army.
Well, my friends joined up. I joined up with them. Yeah.
And you were in, was it Fort Garry Horse?
I was in the Fort Garry Horse previous to...
Did you do any training?
Yes. I went to Shiloh in 1936, 1937. And then it was just peacetime Army until the war broke out in 39. And we went to Jamaica.
You went in the Grenadiers. Was this when the war broke out?
Yeah.
Did you ask for a transfer, or was it a regiment transfer?
From the Fort Garry Horse, you mean? Well, I asked for a transfer. It was still under Fort Garry Horse, which I had to have a transfer into the Grenadiers.
Oh, I see. And did you know anybody in the Grenadiers? I was just wondering why you went in.
Well, it was just my friends, and they joined the Winnipeg Grenadiers, and it was a couple of days after I found out that they were in the Grenadiers that I transferred right away into the Grenadiers.
Oh, I see. Were they friends from Winnipeg?
Yes. We all went to school together and brought up together.
Oh,
okay. We went to Jamaica. We spent 16 months of enjoyable, it really was enjoyable in Jamaica.
Yeah, was that the first time you've been out of the country?
Pretty well, yes.
Mm-hmm. You liked it too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember if you underwent any kind of training at all? Were you getting machine gun
training? Yeah, we were machine gunners when we went over there, yes. And
is this Vickers machine gun?
Vickers machine gun. And we were on garrison duty over there.
Were you pretty good with the machine gun? Do you remember?
Well, average. Yeah. And what else?
Well, you went to Jamaica and you did a little more training. And then I guess you came back to Winnipeg and...
We came back to Winnipeg in 41 and stayed in the Robinson building. And we were there approximately 3 weeks when we were told we were going overseas again.
Did you know where you were going?
No, I never had a clue.
Were you married at the time?
No.
Did you stay with your family?
Yes.
And, did you undergo any kind of training when
you came back? Well, very little training. I mean, infantry training more than anything.
Well, do you remember if you had any infantry training in Jamaica?
No, it was mostly machine gun training there.
It was all Lewis gun.
No, it was still the Vickers then.
Oh, the Vickers, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we came back to Winnipeg. We were here for
3 weeks, and we were told we were going overseas. They didn't tell us where we were going, and we went to Vancouver.
Do you remember in the 3 weeks that you were here, if you ever got together with any of the other guys? Did you go out on leave together?
Well, it was our hometown, eh? We all went out together. Like, we all came back from Jamaica together. We were out all over the place.
Do you remember if the Grenadiers were liked by other people?
I believe they were. They really were, yeah.
Well, as I understand, I think you went by train from Winnipeg to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember much about that train ride?
Well, not so much the train ride. I know some boys got on one side of the train and off the other side, deserted, yeah. We got to Vancouver and we were put on board where the ship was out of bounds to, well, two-thirds of the ship was out of bounds to us. Everything was officers. So, first thing off the bat, they called a mutiny. They were going to, you know, walk off ship. So we're all going to walk off at a certain hour, and when the time came, about a third of the boys walked off, and right away they set up machine guns and all this stuff, you know. The officers ordered machine guns and everything set up, because it was actually a mutiny. But
did you go off the boat, or were you on?
Yeah, I went off the boat, and then there was an officer came on board with a loudspeaker, and he says, if you'd all gone off, you might have got something out of it. But he says, with a third of you's off, he says, you might as well come back on board. And they all went back on board.
Did you get any more room?
Yes, we did get more room, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Remember who called the mutiny, or is it just sort of collective?
I just don't know who called it, but it just went around and shipped it.
It seemed like a pretty good idea. Mm-hmm.
And then right after that, after they got us all back on board, they moved us out about a half a mile, so we couldn't get off. We stayed there until time to sail.
Did you know where you were going at this
time? We were told that we were going, where the heck? We had faint ideas, but not exactly where we were going. Geez, it's so far back. It's
well, it's just things you can remember. I don't know.
Well, anyway, when we were well out to sea, we stopped at Hawaii.
Did you get seasick? Do you remember that?
Only when it came time to eat.
Do you remember if it was rough on board or not?
Yeah.
Did any kind of training or anything?
No, we had no training on board whatsoever.
Remember any incidents or anything that stands out in your mind? Maybe sleeping in the hold? Well, I guess you've done that before. If you're from Jamaica,
you would. No, we went across to Jamaica like kings. We had, they were actually tourist boats that were converted to troop ships. But they still had on their staff of the peacetime, which they treated us like millionaires, in other words.
This wasn't the case with going to Hong Kong? It wasn't like that?
No, going to Hong Kong, we were strictly under more military. We were told as we were approaching that we'd have to fight our way, most likely have to fight our way off the boats. But anyway, we didn't have to fight our way off the boats. But when we got to Hong Kong, we went down, and the Chinese were along the sides of the streets, very happy to see us. Like they were getting help, they were very glad to see us. And at that time, we were taken to a camp, what they call Shamshapo. And myself, I was a transport driver. And I was going to school to be a mechanic's driver. In other words, you have to know enough about your truck to fix it if you broke down on the, like when you're out. And when we got there, we had no trucks, so we took the Chinese trucks, but they sat beside us. Rather, they drove the trucks, but we sat beside them. In other words, we had confiscated their trucks.
Were these army trucks?
Just ordinary civilian trucks.
Yeah. Were they in very good shape?
Well, they were the average civilian truck, eh? And they were to be paid by the government when they put in their application for what we were doing. But then when we were notified the war broke out, we just pushed them out of their seats and took over their trucks altogether. And,
do you remember what you did in I guess it was about 3 weeks you were there before the war. Did you get leave at all, or did you do any kind of training, machine gun training or infantry training?
No, I didn't, because I was in transport. I went to school about, I'd say four times before the actual war broke out, like on driver's mechanics.
Is it, was this here in Winnipeg?
No, this was in Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Was this with British officers? You know, do you remember who was teaching? No, this was transport company. Was there an initial attached to that? A or B or C?
Well, I was in D company, but in transport. And shortly after that, we were to take soldiers up into the hills for maneuvers, which I took a truckload of soldiers up into the hills, and returning, the air sirens started.
Was this in Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Hong Kong Island.
No, no, this is Kowloon, pardon me. Kowloon, yeah. That the air raid sirens started, and I will admit I was very scared.
Is that how you knew that the war had started? Remember?
Well, pretty well, not quite. As I approached coming back, the Air Force had gone over our camp, which was evacuated all up into the hills on maneuvers. But there was a skeleton draft back there, and the first sights of war I seen was a Chinese with his head 10 feet away from him and his body laying shortly back from him.
The Japanese had bombed.
They had bombed the camp, but they had found it evacuated, so they took off to the airfield and bombed the airfield, and then they left.
I guess this would be just a few hours after the war had started.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we stayed there, I think, for a matter of a couple of days or a day.
Were your whole company together, or do you remember?
Well, I wasn't in the company then. I was, like, transport. It was a small unit, you know.
Do you remember if you had many trucks, this unit you were in, if it was just trucks or just a...
Well, we just had trucks, and the fact is we had no revolvers or anything at all. When we wanted a revolver, we had to go sign for it and take it out. And when he came back off your trip, you returned the revolver. And
this is at Shamshapo Camp?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, it would be a Canadian in Shamshapo Camp that you would have to sign for the gun for.
My transport officer. You don't want names.
Well, I was just wondering. It was because they were short of...
Well, we only had about six revolvers in the whole transport. We had, I guess, about 15 trucks with six revolvers. And from there, where do we go?
Well, you're beyond Kowloon for a few days, I guess.
Yes, and then we decided to evacuate the island, at Kowloon rather, and go to Hong Kong, over to Hong Kong, which we all proceeded to cross by ferry, and at the same time the Chinese tried to overcrowd the ferries and go across at the same time, which the British all shot down. They just shot them down because they would have sunk the boat, you know, the way they...
Now this is when you're all evacuating
Kowloon, yeah.
And it was civilians that were trying to get onto the ferry?
Well, they were trying to get across too, yeah, because Japanese were coming down through from Canton or somewhere that way.
Mm-hmm. Had you seen any Japanese by this time?
No, I hadn't seen any at all then.
Yeah, and I know it's a long time, but would you happen to remember what day this would be? Would it be many days after?
It would be a good week after the war started.
Do you remember what you had done in that week?
Well, as I say, I was all over the hills as a transport driver from one station to another, like, you know.
Were you taking food or supplies?
Say that it was a very funny setup. They'd say that the Japanese were coming across on one side, we'd whip men over to that side, and the Japanese were coming in the other side, which was all phony leads, you know, sort of things like that.
So, now you'd be getting your orders from the transport officer?
The transport officer, yeah. And when we were on the other side of, in Hong Kong, We had what we call a sort of a transport depot. We took our orders from there, and we sent from here to there and different points.
Did you still have the Chinese trucks?
Yes, that's all we had all the time we were there was the Chinese trucks.
Well, do you remember if everybody got onto the ferries or if there was anyone left behind? Or?
Well, the soldiers all got on, but the civilians, no, they didn't.
Do you think there were many killed at that time?
Yes, there was hundreds killed. That's it, Chinese, like, they were killed. And on the other side, we were, as I say, in this depot, we took our orders from there, and whenever we were sent out on something, we had to sign for a revolver, and we'd come back, put the revolver back, and have your name cleared.
No. Is this a headquarters or something?
Sort of a headquarters, yeah. And the first contact I had with the Japanese was I was sent on a trip to one side of the island to take soldiers over there, as they'd been told that the Japanese were coming on that side. I dropped them off, and on coming back, we had guards all posted down the sides of the road. And coming back, I see no guards whatsoever. I figured it's just another soldier sleeping in the ditch. So I came through, and nobody stopped me, and I got into what they call one night chong.
One night chong.
One night chong. And I parked my truck and I went down to where the rest of the boys were. And that was the last time I ever seen my truck, because every time I tried to get back to it, they had were riddled it, you know, so it couldn't be driven.
Was driven. It from airplanes or from?
No, from all this. No, this time I was coming back and seeing no soldiers. All the Japanese were along the edge of the road. But they'd let me go through because they never strike until the rising sun, and it was during night, you see, and so they didn't strike, and they'd let me go through. So in Wan Nai Chong, I stayed there for approximately 2 to 3 days, whereas we were under heavy gunfire there, and I became wounded in Wan Nai Chong. And to a funny example there, after we surrendered, we had a padre there with us. And after 3 or 4 days, we threw up our arms. I guess it was a couple of days. We threw up our arms, the white flag, we surrendered. And I had been hit in the legs, couldn't walk. But the padre did come down, and he had been talking to the Japanese officer who had taken us over, and it was just the way he spoke. He said, "Anybody that can walk, please get up and walk." And I don't know whatever made me try to get up and walk, but I got up and I stumbled forward. Well, I had a hand grenade, and it all went through my legs. And I was too scared to look. I just wrapped the bandage around the top of my legs, over my pants. And anyway, through the aid of the following morning, we were taken down this hill, which I fell all the way down because I couldn't walk, and they tied our hands behind our backs, and they left us sitting there pretty well all day. And then towards the next day, they told us to get up, which I couldn't get up because my legs had turned stiff. There was a sergeant and some English soldier who I have never met again, but the sergeant was in our outfit, Sergeant Watson, who put my arms around their shoulders, and they carried me for, well, I'd say approximately a mile and a half. And as the going got tougher, we had one boy that was shot through the groin. And he had a wire around his neck, and then tied down the line. We were all tied behind one another, walking. And he just couldn't keep it up anymore, and he fell down. They cut him loose, and then we heard an ungodly scream at the end of the line. They just put the bayonet to him, and that was it. So myself was being wounded in the legs. They just came along, ripped my shoelaces out to make it tougher for me to walk. And the other boys, they may take off their shoes. So we walked and we walked and we walked. And if you ever prayed for death, just to be quiet, that was the time you wanted to be quiet. So they took us off the edge of the road, they all lined up on the edge of the road. They were going to shoot us. And we just prayed for them to shoot us because we were so tired.
Were there many men?
Well, this was many of our men, you mean?
Yeah.
I'd say there was 40 of us, 30 of us there. And the Japanese were going to shoot us, but just at that time, a squad car drove up full of Japanese, and whatever they were gibbering about, I don't know. But anyway, they put us back on the road, and they marched another about a mile and a half back to Shamshapo. And they threw us, and they were all crying for water. And they brought us up a bucket of salt water. That's what they gave us to drink. So we were left in this camp, I'd say, 4 or 5 days. And then we were taken to... No. Some of us stayed in that camp, and other ones went to another army camp that was there. And we stayed in there for quite some time.
Was this on Hong Kong? Or
this is on Kowloon side they took us back to. And
maybe I can go back and then there are a couple of things I want to know. When you were on Hong Kong, before you were running, when you were driving the truck, do you remember if you were getting much food and water at that time, or any chance to sleep at all?
Well, very little sleep, but we always had food and water because, I mean, with being on the truck, you could always get it, eh?
Yeah. How about the other men? Do you think they were getting that? I know people were pretty spread out.
To tell you the truth, I couldn't tell you. I don't think at that time anybody was suffering for food or anything at that time.
Were you carrying supplies or anything? Were you carrying ammunition? Was it mostly just men?
Well, no, we had a couple of hand grenades in our pouches and just what you'd carry, but food was no problem at that time at all.
Something else that maybe you can remember, about how many Chinese trucks you would maybe be using to transport them. Trucks would be active on the island?
I'd say we had 15 anyway.
15 trucks. Now this would be just Canadians, or would it be Canadians and British?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't know much about them. I mean, all I was myself, and that was it.
Do you remember much about how long things functioned as a regiment?
Well, there was no such thing as a regiment. Everybody was just scattered. You're more or less on your own, you know, things like that.
Was this pretty much from the time you went to the island, or was it after
the Japanese attacked it? It was pretty much you're on your own.
Did they do much bombing?
Quite a bit, yeah, a lot of bombing, but an awful lot of their bombs were duds.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know, they must have sabotage in there somewhere. Very lot of duds.
Did they ever try and bomb your truck when you were driving?
Well, I tell you, as we were driving transport there, our first experience of the war, we'd jump out of our trucks and run and hide. But it was explained to us that a moving object was much harder to hit than a still object, and we got used to the bombings then, and we stayed with our trucks. And it was much better.
Do you remember what kind of truck it was you were driving? What kind of condition it was in? Did you have one truck, or did you change your
mind? Oh, I had a number of trucks. When the one conked out, you just went and grabbed another one, and that was it. But there was no army trucks whatsoever. They're all civilian trucks.
And did you have you just had a couple of grenades?
Grenades and a rifle.
Well, when you were captured, was most of D Company captured at that time?
Well, I wasn't actually in D Company at the time. I was transport, you see. D Company is a company, and I mean transport is sort of off on its own, like with a small...
Okay, I think I've done that. Well, you said there were about 30 or 40 of you captured at that time?
In one night chong, yeah.
Yeah. Did you know what the Japanese, whether they would take prisoners?
Well, at that time,
it would do to you when they they captured you after you surrendered?
Well, we didn't know they'd take prisoners or not, but they did take us. But the boys that were so wounded at the time where I got up, when I got up and walked, and they were left behind. I do know that a work party went out later to bury, and all they found was burnt boots, and they had been burnt alive in the pillboxes they were left in, I understand.
What about the officers? What you thought of the officers during the battle?
Well, they were very good. Some had different opinions, but I mean, I'll say they were all very good. And,
Well, you were wounded, and you were marched to
Shamshapo.
Did you go over by ferry?
Yes, we did go by ferry over to.
Did you walk through the streets of
Calgary? Yeah.
It must be very difficult for you to remember because you.
Exactly, yeah, it is kind of hard to.
It's been a long time, and conditions were different. And they gave you salt water. Well, were you. Do you remember going back into the camp? Were there other prisoners there by that time?
Oh, there were other prisoners there, yeah. And then approximately, well, we just more laid less, just everyday general duties. Then diphtheria hit our camp with this dysentery and.
Did you get any medical treatment?
None whatsoever at that time, no.
Did you eventually get medical treatment?
Well, we did have doctors there, our Portuguese doctors, but they had no medical supplies. They only had their knowledge of. Trying to help you, but nothing to help you as far as medical went. Which we all did eventually come down with dysentery. And myself, I had yellow jaundice and malaria both at the same time, which put me at a very high fever. My eyesight went when I had this high fever.
Mm-hmm. Did you regain your eyesight?
Well, it's never really changed since I've come back. It was poor over there after the high fever, and they told me once I got back on good food, it would most likely stay as it was. And it has pretty well stayed.
Were you given any kind of good food at that time? Right?
No.
And were you working?
Well, as I was going to tell you, that we were in Hong Kong approximately 2 years. And I wasn't on the first work party that they sent to Japan because we figured that we were going to get out any time. You know how your morale goes, you figure you're going to get out. And then as the rumors went on that we were told that it was much better conditions and everything in Japan itself, that we'd be fed good and looked after and everything like that, they came in one day and they asked for all the ones that were interested in going to Japan to step forward, which I was one to step forward. And about 3 days after that, we were put on a boat. It was a very small boat. But instead of having the freedom of the boat, they put us down in the hold, and we were like sardines down there, just back to forth in the bottom of the hold there. They dropped our bucket of rice down by a rope down into the hold to us. And we were out, I guess, at sea for about 4 days. And first thing you know, we were in Formosa. And apparently our boat had sprung trouble or something. So they pulled us out of the hold there and they put us on a very big boat then. Then we had more freedom in the boat. They let us walk around and so forth like this.
Do you remember if you're allowed to take things with you, like blankets or anything?
Well, we had no such thing as blankets, yeah. Just what you had on your back.
What you had in your back when you walked into camp, what you had pretty well.
Pretty well, yeah. And when we were put on this larger boat, as I say, we had more freedom, but somewhere along the line out there, they were going to take over this boat, another mutiny deal. they
the
prisoners were going to take over the boat, because we did have some pretty smart guys on this boat, like all the merchant marines and all this, which were prisoners of war, and they had been in the Far East. They knew what it was all about. But anyway, for some reason or another, this never did come off, but they figured it was all set that we were going to just take over like that. Well, at that time, we felt we could, because with all these guys that were running these, they knew what they were talking about. They'd run boats and everything before, you know. Yeah. It was just a matter of taking over a few crew, and we had the boat.
Were there any soldiers and guards in
there? Well, no, it was more or less just an ordinary... It wasn't a troop ship, and it wasn't a... You see, we were put on this boat because we had trouble with a small boat. So it was just an ordinary boat. And there was only what they have the ordinary crew on it.
Did you have any idea why it didn't happen? Maybe no leadership?
Well, I don't know. I never did find out why it didn't happen. All I know is that it just didn't happen. And there we went to Hong Kong, to Japan. And we were taken off the boat, put on a train, and we were taken to a camp. And when the train stopped and there was all these men standing around, they were our buddies. And they were so skinny and so black, we didn't even know them. They were just skeletons.
Were these Canadians?
Yeah, these were our boys that had gone on the first bunch over that was promised all these good things that we were coming to get, you see. They were worse shape than we were. So then I was taken to a camp. It was Oyama, I believe the name of the camp was. And we worked in coal mines and ore mines and things like this.
Is that what these other guys
are yeah.
doing? Mm-hmm. Is that why they
were black? Yeah, black and thin. Oh, they were really thin. You couldn't even recognize them. Their cheekbones sticking right out.
Well, were you getting enough people?
Well, no, we had not fallen like they had, because we were getting a bowl of rice, but we were not compelled to work as hard as they were, you see. So naturally, rice is fattening to a certain extent, but...
Did they ever get any vegetables or
greens? Only a vegetable which they call a daikon, which grows in the snow. Like what will grow in through the snow, like the ground is never frozen. But we never got the actual daikon, just got the top of it. It was just put into water, and that was called soup.
You said that you had gotten sick. Do you think it was because you were lacking food of some kind? Was it just because you'd been wounded?
I can't say what brought on the malaria and the yellow jaundice. I don't know what that brought that on. Well, when I went into the army, I was 165. When I was released, I was just around the 100 mark. And the next couple years was pretty rough with working in the coal mines and coal and ore, yeah.
Were there many Canadians there?
Well, they were two-thirds Canadians. We had a few British and a few Swedish, I think, out of submarines or something.
Do you remember the name of the camp or where it was?
I think it was Oyama was the camp I was in.
There were Swedish and a few English?
English, yeah.
Were there many men in the camp?
Well, I'd say 300 anyway. Well, they're all huts, and as you walk into the hut, there's no such thing as a bed or a room or anything. It's just a raised platform. You walk down a corridor, and like if you're going to bed, you slip off your shoes and step up onto this platform. That was the bed.
Were
and we had no clothing whatsoever. We were only allowed fires after a certain hour at night, and the only wood we had is what we picked up on the return from work.
Fires now, would each man have a fire, or would they be...
Oh no, there was one of those oil, or like an old, we call them a drum, and that was like a stove, you know. And you're only allowed to have that on for maybe an hour. It didn't even get the hut warm. But it was on for an hour, and then it was, everybody cuddled around it, and then it was back to bed.
Did you have any clothes at this time?
Just what I had on my back.
A
shirt, a pair of pants, and I had sort of an old army jacket, which I had.
Did you have any shoes?
No, I had these wooden pair of, you know, it was a couple piece of wood with a strap across the top. I wore those for shoes.
Did you have any other belongings of any kind? Spoon,
food? No, we all pretty well learned to eat with chopsticks over there. Yeah. And we used to eat that rice one kernel by each one because it used to last longer.
you said a bowl of rice it was.
And a bun at noon, which was about the size of a hot dog bun. You'd come in at night, you got another bowl of rice and a bowl of soup, either if you call it soup, or it's just this daikon greens. That was it.
Would you work early in the morning to late at night? Did you ever get any breaks throughout the day, or any breaks at all in a month or a year?
Oh, the only breaks you actually got was that way, like they have what they call a hanchao over there. That's your guard. Well, in other words, they're forced Korean work. They're forced guards because they're under the Koreans, like they're forced under the Japanese. And some of them are pretty good. I mean, they would give you a break and, you know, they were go along with you a little bit. The only ones that were cruel to you was if it was actually the Japanese himself. But if the Japanese was by himself, he wasn't bad either. He had to be in a group before he was nasty. Like, you know, he had a bit of feeling, but he had to be the big shot in with other fellows. Yeah.
Go to work early in the morning?
To tell you the truth, I can't remember the hours, but I know it was during the day and we came back at supper time, but the hours I couldn't actually tell you because I can't remember, right?
Would you take a ride or would
you walk to work? No, we walked mostly.
Was it drilling or blasting in the morning or digging?
No, digging mostly. Well, they had a little trick over there. We were by the ocean, and you had to fill so many ore cars per day. And as I say, the hanchaos were, you get a good one, you get a bad one. And he'd turn around and say to us, you fill four, you go for a swim. Well, we'd fill that four, and sure enough, he'd let us go for a swim. The first thing we were digging for was these clams, the suckums, and you get the salt out of them. You know, you're craving salt so much. And the next day, he'd say, five cars, you go for a swim. And he kept on building his quota up like that until we just couldn't do it no more. And we didn't get our swim from then on because just couldn't keep up to his quota that he wanted.
This only lasted shortly.
Yeah.
Remember any recreation camps?
We never had no recreation at all. And then what's the only guy that was in it, there's three people run the camp there, and two people run the camp there, three. There was the Japanese, our Sergeant Major Tugby that you've read about, and some British soldier that was in with Tugby. Now, they run the whole deal. What they said went.
You mentioned earlier that there was a court-martial.
Well, when we came back, he was court-martialed. Like, they had laid charges. In fact, is after we were released from prisoner war camps, we were put on these boats. And Sergeant Major Tugby would have been a dead man if the American soldiers, sailors, hadn't stopped our boys from putting them overboard because they were just going to kill him, get rid of him.
Was this because of what he'd done? Something
and because he had done, yes, in the camp. And anyway, that, well, the American sailors, they wanted to know what was going on. They locked Tugby up for his own safety, eh? And when we got back, then they claimed this court-martial against Tugby. And they had quite a session here over the thing at Fort Osmond Barracks there. It lasted about 3 or 4 months. But when it was all over, they took it in consideration that it was the tiring times that he'd gone through, that he had made him like this. And the sentence he got was 6 months. 6 months, but it was 6 months, which they took in consideration that he'd be in confinement from the time he'd been back. And that was the sentence. I understand he's left the country, never come back.
Can I ask what the incident was?
Well, he just went in with the Japanese, that was all. I mean, he was, when Red, well, I think throughout the whole time we had two parcels of Red Cross come in. And while we were all 100 pounds, he was still his 165, 170 pounds, whatever his just approximate weight. But he was in good shape when he come out as when he went in. And he was like eating like a millionaire. He learned how to speak Japanese. He was their friends. And on different occasions where, whereas we had to line up in the morning to be counted, we all tried to get the same spot as we were in the day before because we remembered the number in Japanese, like you had to say it in Japanese, you know.
This was in the morning?
Yeah, well, before you went to work, like a roll call. And like my number was 294, which is Nyaku Kujuyan, which I had to remember that, but I couldn't say the next guy's to me because I didn't know it, so I tried to get my same spot every morning, you see. And if you weren't lucky to get into a spot and you started rhyming off your numbers and you couldn't say your number, then Tugby would come up and give you an awful smack across the chin because he was out there with the Japanese officer and he had to show his point, you know. He'd come up and give you a smack across the face and tell you to smarten up.
Was he always like this, or did things get worse?
Well, no, he was like that all the time. Ever since he learned to speak Japanese and he worked himself in there and he was treated as one of them.
Did he, like, sleep with the other men?
Oh, no, he slept up in, well, like...
Well, maybe you could describe a bit of the camp for me.
Well, it's
the Japanese commandant, did he stay in the camp?
No, the Japanese, no, the guards did at the gate. They had a hut there, and the rest of the compound was a series of huts with a, I guess it was what you, sort of a pool in the center. I guess that was what you call for fire, like if they had a fire, they could bail water out of.
Is this where you would get your water for drinking?
To tell you the truth, I don't ever remember having a drink of water there. That's honest to God's truth. No, what I mean to say is this, we had a cookhouse, eh?
Right.
And I mean, there's, I got my food and everything from the cookhouse. It was brought to the different shacks, and you all got your bucket, which you shared it out. Like, as far as having a drink of water, I don't ever remember having one.
Remember the cookhouse? Did you go to the cookhouse to get food? Or
no, we had a, like the head of the shack, he went and got his bucket and brought it back to the shack, and then you all stood in line and got your bowl, and it was all. And every colonel, nobody got any more than anybody else.
Did you ever get any tea?
Well, at that time I didn't.
You can't remember drinking water.
Well, I must have drank water, but I mean, where I got it from, I haven't got a clue.
That was a long time ago now.
Yeah. No, I just haven't got a clue. Where have I got a drink of water? I know it was there, I drank water, but just how I got it, I don't, can't remember.
What about the cookhouse? Was there one cook for
the... No, there was... No, there was five or six in the cookhouse. And they always managed to look a little bit better than us. I mean, they weren't supposed to, but they did, and they could work a little bit, and they always looked a little bit better than us. And that's about it, I guess.
Do you ever remember getting any news from the outside? Do you know what was happening during the war?
Well, I'll tell you, we had, as I say, there was a five or six guys brought in off a submarine, and they were in a hut by themselves. And from in Japan was completely rumors. That's all we got in Japan. This was in Shamshapo, but in Hong Kong. But apparently they had built a radio in a mess can. So how they did, I don't know. But they built a radio in a mess can. And they used to get through all the different news, and then naturally it spread around the camp as far as... But one day the officers came in, and they went into that camp, and they walked right to the mess can, and they took those six guys out of the camp. We never seen them to this day. I don't know where they went or what.
Japanese officers?
They came in and walked straight to the mess can. Somebody squealed. And they took those six guys out, and we never did see them that day. Don't know what happened. I've never heard of them anymore.
Besides the radio, did you ever get any newspapers?
No.
Did you ever get a Red Cross parcel?
We got two out of the whole time we were there. But the Red Cross parcels, they gave them to us one day, and being a pile of fools, you hoard it, you don't eat it, you know, because you look at it, it's a satisfactory feeling you've got it. I mean, it almost gives you as much satisfaction as eating it. And we were so happy with these parcels, and we had it all under our little place that we sleep. Next morning we went out to work. When we came back, they had all been gathered up. And we were told that they did not want to see these parcels because we get sick and could not work. So they were going to distribute it to us daily in our meals. Like, well, when they gave us the rice that night, they must open four cans of bully beef and put it in for 200 men. So when you got your rice, you're lucky if you found one little kernel in that rice. And I think that's where Tugby and them managed to stay fat. They were eating like full cans of pulley beef while we were getting maybe a strand out of a can.
Did they know if they ever kept putting some the Red Cross parcels in the food, or did they only one?
No, they kept that up quite a bit. They did. I mean, it was...
So you would get... Do you remember getting any chocolate?
No, I never got no chocolate.
I was just wondering if the Red Cross parcel was...
Well, I never got any chocolate anyway. Never get any chocolate in mine. I know there was butter and cheese and jam, and that was the kind of stuff you crave for more.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't be getting any news in Japan. Have you ever seen the American planes flying over?
Did I? In Japan, yes, the planes did come over, reconnaissance planes, quite a bit. But outside of reconnaissance planes, I've never seen any planes.
Did they ever bomb the area?
In Oyama, towards the end there, they brought in food, and they dropped it by plane down into the camps.
Now, this would be after the war.
This would be after the war.
What about the mine itself? Was there a smelter there, too? Big factory?
Like a big factory, yes.
Were the Japanese?
Not the Japanese. They were all, as they called these henchows, forced Korean labor. Yeah. They were the ones that were there.
Well, was there a city nearby?
Not too far away, yeah.
Maybe you can tell me a little bit about when the war was over.
Well, I'll tell you how we discovered the war was over. One day there, we were out on a work party, and we came in, and we were locked up in our camps. They had an officers' meeting, Japanese meeting, yeah. And we didn't go to work that day at all, next night they didn't pay any attention to lights out or anything at all. We should have lights on. Next day we didn't go to work at all. And that following day we went outside and all the Japanese had their rifles upside down with their bayonets into the ground, and they were apparently praying or something, or some custom of theirs or something. And that's where some of the boys that are in our camp, which had been in the Far East an awful lot, they knew the war was over. And that's how we discovered the war was over.
Must have been a pretty good feeling.
It sure was.
Did you have any idea that the war was maybe going to be over?
Well, we've given up all hope. I mean, there's rumors and everything. It's like everything else. When you're over there, you get your hair clipped off because your morale's low. You get taken right off. As your morale gets higher, you let your hair grow away. Put the rifles upside down with them. Well, that's what these other fellows had told us. The war was over, and sure enough, it was over.
Do you remember then? Well, I guess then the planes would come to the camp.
They came over the camp and they dropped his food by parachute down into the camps. And everyone that came down didn't open because we were right by the water, and they couldn't go very high. They had to go pretty low. And everyone they came down, they just all bust up into a million pieces. And otherwise, there was jam, there was cheese, there was everything all smeared up. But we did make one law that nobody touches that. So anyway, we got all this stuff and we put it in one big Kong. It was the best Christmas dinner you ever had in your life. I mixed up of all the different concoctions. In fact, as I said it myself over that time, when I get home, I'm going to make this. No, it turned my stomach. But we did eat there. When this stuff did come down like that, we had all we wanted to eat. You'd smoke a cigarette, you'd run for the toilet, you'd come back, eat some more, run for the toilet, it'd go right through you, you know, just right through.
I guess if there was meat, you had meat for any quantity.
Well, it was the only type of meat it was. Well, as I say, this was jam, cheese, butter, clink. That was the type of meat. I put it all together.
Well, did you remain in the camp for any while? Do you remember who came to the camp?
Well, we were there for a good week and a half after, and they were told that they would come and take us, which they did. And the Japanese were still in charge of us at that time, though. Because at that time, if they never looked after us, the civilians would have killed us. Because they were so bitter against us over that bombing of, what's that big bomb that went or something? Yeah, they were so bitter against us.
Was that close to where you were?
Well, I don't know just how close it was, but it couldn't be very far because we went by train and we went through there. And there was all American tents and everything set up there with nurses and so forth like that. And I hadn't spoke to anybody for 4 years. They like a girl or anything like this. And when she spoke to us, she'd you couldn't say nothing back, just speechless. And we went through one side of the hut. They stripped us right down. You went through a shower. When you come out the other side, they give you all clean clothing and everything. And then it was a matter of you had a sort of a medical, and the ones that had good hearts, they flew back. The ones that had poor hearts, and then they came back by boat.
Had you had a hot shower in all
the years? Well, it depends. We had what we had there. We had either the option of having a bath or tea. Now, it was either one. We were allowed so much water, and we had a bathtub. It must have been 12 by 12, like a small pool. And we had to save water to put in this pool. Now, when it was bath night, there was 300 had to go through that pool, eh? If you were the first 50, you got a good bath. If you were at the end of the 300, you were bathing in coal dust. And that was their bath.
Yeah. You get quite dirty in the morning.
Oh, bless you.
Remember anything, any incident at all that would stand out in your mind in the camp? Like, I don't know, storms or people trying to escape? Something funny?
Well, we had three boys try to escape from Hong Kong, and they went over the wall and never did. We did hear that they were captured and tortured and killed. And one was supposed to apparently wrote a letter to his mother or something. Maybe you heard about that, where he wrote a letter to his mother saying he couldn't stand it any longer and that he'd be seeing her soon. And he went over the wall, but he got caught. And from what, just rumor, I hear they were tortured and killed. It was three of them.
Wow, I think you should go. How long were you in Chicago? A couple of years?
I was in there 2 years there and about a year and a half in Japan.
Did you work while you were in Chicago?
Well, some did, some didn't. The first part, before I went to Japan, I don't think the work was pushed on us too much from Shamshupo, because it was more or less taking drafts to go over to Japan. But after we left, from what I realized, the boys were building an airport or something out there. I didn't come in on that deal at all. I left there before they started that. But the rest was just more or less routine.
How did you get back from Japan? You had showers and you were cleaned up.
And then
new clothes, new clothes.
And then I went to Guam. I went to Guam. I was in Guam. I had another medical in Guam.
You go by boat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then from Guam I went to Vancouver. And I was in Vancouver for approximately 4 days. And then I came through to Winnipeg.
Were you hospitalized at
home? Well, when I came back, I was hospitalized for a while, and I've been a patient at Deer Lodge ever since. I still go out there all the time.
How about pensions and that? Do you feel that the government's been pretty good to you?
Well, I have no complaints. They've looked after me well since I've been back.
Can I ask what you feel about the Japanese after what they put you through?
Well, myself, I don't hold anything against them. I mean, some guys, as soon as they see a Jap, they want to fight right away, but I'm not like that myself.
How about the Americans?
How I get along with the Americans?
Yeah,
I think they're tops. I think they're a good outfit. They're a lot of bullshitters, so they're good.
I forgot to ask, were there any Americans in camp?
I think we had just a handful. I don't know how they ever got in there, but they were there. Huh? Well, I haven't said nothing.
That's okay. I don't know if there's anything else. Yeah, that's just about everything I wanted to know.